You are listening to Maximilian on the Afterlife podcast. Afterlife is book two in the Bedtime Stories for the Intellectually Adventurous, written by me, Maximilian Defoe. Thank you for joining me for episode 8, Fame. Jimmy strolled out of the man's wardrobe, through a white and gray limestone bathroom and into another walk-in closet across the way, Cassandra's. He'd seen photographs of famous female pop singers in their walk-in closets in lifestyle magazines. Cassandra's closet was on that level. The closet he'd been in on the other side of the bathroom that he'd thought was so boss wasn't hardly worth mentioning compared to what was going on over here. A big glass chandelier hung like a piñata over a round foyer table on which stood an enormous vase of flowers, curly-cue branches, and decorative twigs. It was a work of art. He'd seen flowers like this before, but at hotels like Shutters and the Beverly Hills Hotel, not at anyone's house. The chandelier was an eclectic combination of metal ball chain and non-traditional ironwork, with small, flame-shaped bulbs inside, the kind that flickered to emulate candlelight. Jimmy looked around for the light switch. For far longer than he'd have done if anyone could have seen him, Jimmy played with Cassandra's expensive chandelier and light switch dimmer. Once the visual effect of the pinpoints of light blooming and fading away stopped giving him chills, he looked around at the rest of her things. The first thing that caught his attention was an antique dresser. He'd seen the same dresser at her grandparents' house in Calabasas on the night that he'd last seen Cassandra, still an unborn babe. It had been in the hallway at the Leventhals, hand-painted. The paint was worn to the wood in some places, but that was a part of its charm. It was the color of pine needles and embellished with engravings. Impish and odd-looking faces gazed out from a molding that was wrapped around beneath the lip of its surface. The little faces weren't menacing exactly, but they weren't wearing facial expressions to entice curious passers-by to come take a look. The dresser looked haunted, and maybe it was. After all, he was here, and he was dead, wasn't he? Cassandra was probably still getting drunk in her study. He wondered if she'd mind him being in here if she knew. Jimmy guessed not. In any case, she wasn't likely to find out, and couldn't be bothered by his snooping if she didn't know. Jimmy stood in front of the dresser, tapping his fingers on his chin, trying to decide which of the drawers to go through first. Of the four drawers, the three to the right were fitted with skeleton key locks. The furthest to the left had no keyhole at all. Jimmy was no expert, but this dresser was definitely an antique. It looked medieval. It didn't really seem to fit with Cassandra's style, which, Jimmy guessed, was why it was living in the closet. She must have inherited it when her grandparents died. Jesse, even if he hadn't died, probably still wouldn't have been around to offer much comfort. How could the same exact parents he had have raised such a louse? Jimmy knew that Cassandra probably didn't think so, but growing up without Jesse in her life had been a blessing in disguise. Jimmy reached for the farthest left drawer. Locked. Jimmy stuck out his bottom lip. In the next drawer was just one lingerie set, a pink bra and matching panties. They were the fanciest Jimmy had ever seen. This lingerie was on the level of the stuff he'd seen on the runway at the Victoria's Secret Angel show at New York Fashion Week the last time he'd gone. It was a great experience. Unfortunately, he'd only been able to make it out 1 year, his last year. It was a full week of expensive dinners, new pussy, booze, and cocaine, but only a sniff here and there. Not like Brazil at all. Why was this bra and panty set all on its own? Then the answer dawned. It was her bridal set. Before he knew what he was doing, Jimmy's hand was reaching for the next drawer pull. Unlocked. Bras. And more panties. But all of these sets were in bright jewel colors. Emerald green, dark purple, burgundy, navy blue. This woman was a dream. Had Jimmy been born a woman, he'd always thought he'd have had an addiction to high-heeled shoes. Digging through Cassandra's panties, he now found lingerie more appealing. Jimmy looked at the final drawer and hoped for something good, something juicy. What he found was more panties, all of them black, all of them lace, all deadly expensive, surely. Jimmy had spent some serious coin in Agent Provocateur one Christmas. He wasn't familiar with the brand of Cassandra's lingerie, but could tell by the style of her underwear that it was pricey. When it came to lingerie, Jimmy found that the retail price had an indirect relationship to functionality. So these see-through lace panties, if they're even still called that at this high a level, so delicate they look like they were stitched by spiders, with transparent sashes attached to the inner waistband that crisscrossed, framing the wearer's navel in a triangle, must have come with insurance papers. The faintest hint of rose hit Jimmy in the face. He scooped up a fistful of Cassandra's underwear in his hands and pulled it to his nostrils. He inhaled deeply. And that's when he felt the shift in the atmosphere. He wasn't alone. Jimmy froze. He'd had his eyes shut sniffing the panties, and now he swore he felt someone watching. He was afraid to look. Who or what spies on a ghost? Slowly, as if he might protect himself from harm by pretending not to see, from a squint, he opened his eyes and looked down. A little round face beamed up at him, looking directly into his eyes. This must be the little boy they call Bump. He looked like a miniature cherub. His features were fine. He had a little triangle nose and two almost filled in rows of little white baby teeth. He wore his hair long and loose. It hung in sandy brown clumps around his shoulders. He continued to grin up at Jimmy.
I see you,
Bump said. Articulate little guy. Jimmy figured Bump was about three. In a hurry, Jimmy stuffed Cassandra's silky panties back into the open drawer and closed it. He wanted to pick up the kid and hug him, swinging him around like he'd seen Michael swing the little girl in the park, to tousle Bump's hair and stroke his rosy marshmallow toddler cheeks, toss him into the air and catch him on the way down in the same way that his own father had greeted him when he was about Bump's age if they had been apart all day. He wanted to tickle the little boy with the mischievous grin and ask him what he was doing in his mother's closet. But Jimmy was afraid. He didn't want to hurt Cassandra's baby boy, this little boy she called Bump. But if the kid could see dead people and wasn't afraid, maybe he was immune to any mal effects of Jimmy's ghosty touch. Jimmy smiled down at the kid. "Can you hear me?" Jimmy asked Bump. With an even bigger grin, Bump nodded his head, "Yes." Bump gestured for Jimmy to bend down. When he did, Bump, before Jimmy realized what he was doing, reached out and grabbed Jimmy by the hand. Nothing happened. Jimmy felt the little boy's hand in his, warm but not sticky like he expected a three-year-old's hand to be. Bump pulled Jimmy around the room until they stood at the end of Cassandra's closet. Still holding Jimmy's hand, Bump pointed up at a vibrant red hat box on top of a shelf.
"Please," said Bump.
It wasn't a request, it was a command. Had he been living, of course, he'd have told Bump no when he'd asked for the box. But, like the pimp suits in the other closet, if his tampering were to be discovered, it would just be one of those unexplainable things. He looked around for a ladder, but didn't see one. He was going to have to jump up to grab the box. He hoped his landing wouldn't make a sound. Not that it would matter much if someone came in here to investigate the noise. Whoever it would be would probably only see Bump. Jimmy turned back to the hat box. He dropped Bump's little paw, and Jimmy reached for the box. It was a lot closer than he thought it would be. He might not even need the ladder. Before long, his hands were upon it, and he brought it down to his level. With a feeling of accomplishment, he held the box in his hands and squatted down. Bump looked at Jimmy with wide, twinkling eyes.
"Jimmy, open."
If he hadn't already been dead, Jimmy would have died. How did this little kid know his name? Patiently, but more fervently this time, Bump made a second request.
"Please."
Bump looked into Jimmy's face, ostensibly to see what was holding up the program. He'd asked twice now and said please, yet the big red hat box remained closed.
Uncle Jimmy.
And then Bump patted Jimmy gently on his cheek and smiled, for effect. Jimmy opened the hat box.
Candy.
All different kinds. Jolly Ranchers in cherry, watermelon, and blue raspberry. There weren't any of the green ones, Jimmy noticed, which had been his least favorite flavor. Reese's peanut butter cups, peanut M&Ms, miniature packages of cherry Twizzlers, and a pineapple flavor, too. That flavor hadn't been a thing when Jimmy was up and moving around. King-sized boxes of Nerds. Jimmy didn't remember these flavors. Pina colada, Mai Tai, rum and coke. Seriously? Aren't these candies for children? He looked at the ingredients of the rum and coke flavored box. Contains real alcohol. Well, that answers that. The most adult candy Jimmy ever had was vodka-soaked gummy bears. Now those were good. He'd eaten dozens of them trying to get drunk at a party in Hermosa Beach, realizing only later that he could have caused a serious party disaster. Printed in small letters on the back of the bag in a font too small to read, some smarty-pants girl at the party had found a warning label, cautioning consumers not to eat more than 5 or 6 in a sitting. Nobody buys a bag of gummy bears and only eats 6. Even cutting someone off at a dozen was unreasonable. But the warning had been there, all the same. Because she was the type to ruin everybody's fun, the smarty pants made everyone watch a YouTube video of a man who'd eaten the same gummy bears, they weren't soaked in booze, and had eaten, according to the label, far too many, on purpose, on camera. It was a 1-pound bag. He'd eaten them all. The gummy bears had given the man what sounded to Jimmy and to everyone else in the kitchen watching the video, like explosive diarrhea. It is amazing what people put themselves through to get their faces out there. There wasn't enough money in the world to get Jimmy to suffer through explosive diarrhea on camera. Bump's dark eyes shone like polished cherimoya seeds. He reached out his little hand and held it suspended in the air over the hat box as if he were summoning the spirits. His tiny fingers trembled, probably, Jimmy speculated, with greed. Quickly, but thoughtfully, Bump picked out a few pieces, putting his selections in his other hand. When Bump had a handful, Jimmy put the lid back on the box. Bump shoved his loot into the pockets of his cargo pants, wiped his hands on his "Don't Grow Up, It's a Trap" t-shirt, and reached up for Jimmy's hand. Not just Jimmy. Uncle Jimmy. This little boy, who Jimmy now knew, was actually named Jesse, knew him, and was calling him a family name. Cassandra, the little baby Jimmy hadn't even made the slightest effort to get to know, had come to visit him, in spite of it, and had brought her kids to know him as he'd lain unconscious at home. Amazing. Jimmy felt like a heel. Bump led Jimmy into Cassandra's bedroom, pulled him through was more like it. The little guy seemed to want to get out of there, fast. Probably wasn't supposed to be in here, Jimmy postulated. It was easy to understand. Everything in the room was either satin, suede, pale pink, or white. Not under any circumstances a room for children to play in, or to even stand in. A kid like Bump could probably fart and soil something. It was like a museum of delicate things. Bump let Jimmy drag them both to a stop. The bed was enormous. If Jimmy had come to a woman's house and seen a bed like this, he'd have tried to get her pregnant so he could move in. It was a king-sized bed, raised high off the ground, on a platform that reminded Jimmy of a sugar cone. It was round, with rounded steps, shaped like lily pads, winding around the outside of a staged area, featuring the ginormous bed. 2 nightstands, and 2 lamps with chrome lampshades. A pale pink chinchilla throw lay draped across an elegant bench at the foot of the bed upholstered in mink. The fur looked real to Jimmy. An elaborate chandelier hung overhead. It was easily as wide as Jemmy was tall. A low-profile table, created from a tree trunk, dipped in gold, topped with a pale pink tinted glass, stood beyond the bench. It held, of course, an enormous arrangement of flowers. Wild roses, yellow margarils, yellow pansies, all flowers Jemmy's mother used to like. Janine Jennings was addicted to a television show about two gardeners and had gotten Jemmy hooked, too. Watching Rosemary and Thyme was one of their favorite ways to spend a weekend together. They'd watch a few episodes of the show, then spend the rest of the day looking at various flowers, ordering their plant roots online, planting whatever little starter plants they'd bought from a nearby nursery, or some erroneous mystery seeds Janine produced from the gardening shed, and then do a little digging in the dirt so they could feel like they, too, were gardening. Jemmy knew all the prettier flowers' common names and their meanings. This arrangement sent a strong message. Somebody was missing Cassandra, and they were letting her know it with flowers. Yellow blossoms, red carnations, and several apple blossom sprigs exploded from a glossy black pedestal vase. The language of flowers was loud. I love you. I miss you. I'm miserable without you. I'm waiting for you, the flowers said. Jemmy was entranced in the glamour. Bump tugged Jemmy along to a low table near the door. He pointed to a black telephone and said, Ring!
Yeah, the telephone makes that sound. Ring, Jemmy spoke softly.
He was sure that Cassandra and her companions hadn't been able to see him, but he wasn't sure if his voice could be heard or not. That was a common component in many hauntings, wasn't it? People hearing voices, usually threatening messages and sounds like, Get out! Jemmy thought for a minute about the possibility of being heard, and what, if anything, he might want to say.
Ring!
Shrieked Bump.
Oh my God, be quiet!
Whispered Jemmy, urgently, but not annoyed. Bump grinned. Then he shrieked again.
Ring!
Any second, Cassandra or the nanny was going to come running in here.
Why was Bump doing this? What the hell did he want?
And the moment he'd asked, the answer coalesced from the darkness. Bump wanted Jemmy to answer the telephone. He wanted to play. Jemmy raised an eyebrow, tilting his head at Bump. He reached for the phone.
Hello, he said, mocking his own debonair affectation. This is Jemmy Jennings.
Bump went crazy with laughter. Jemmy, improvising a loud hang-up in his ear, crossed his eyes, yanked the receiver away from his ear as if it had bit him, and replaced the receiver on its cradle. Bump laughed himself to tears. This time, it was Jemmy reaching for Bump's little hand, tugging him away. Thank you for listening to the Afterlife Podcast, serialized fiction based on Afterlife, available on Amazon. Join me next week for episode 9. Real pain for my sham friends. Envy betrays its host in subversive ways. We'll meet Karen and see what happens when good friends go bad. We'll meet wretched Richard, the friendship that just won't end. And next week's episode features original poems by me. This week's episode features music by Otis McDonald. You're listening to Rich Man in the Sky. Want some visuals on Afterlife? Check out my pins on Pinterest. I have a pin board full of stuff that's in Cassandra's closet, so check it out. I have many Afterlife-themed boards on Pinterest. Let's link up. You can find me on Twitter at MAXXIMILLIAN, and you can always send me a message via my website, TARYN. Maximilian Defoe, DAFOE.com.
Oh my God, it's so long!
It's okay, I put some links in the description of this podcast. Stop by and say hello. Thanks for listening.